Suave Afternoon, Suave Afternoon, Suave Afternoon. This is Brother Suave, your mind-blowing, thought-provoking, and eye-opening, on-air personality, life coach, psycho therapist, author, and creator. So, it is so many benefits to being proactive. I remember during the recession, you know, I would hear people saying, listen, I need a job. And they wouldn't hire people who need it. And the person, they hired a person who had a job and they applied for another job as opposed to, I don't have a job.
That's time to look for a job is when you already have one.
Yes, yes. And again, Brother Frederick was saying this. I try not to get so caught up on the particular religious philosophy and how spiritual are, but a foundation is so important. Because it gives you some morals and values, no matter if you're a Muslim, a Catholic, or a Jehovah's Witness, or a Christian, or a Baptist, or whatever, you have to have respect. You can't do that. You can't do that stuff. You know, and so we teach them emotional intelligence. Teach them how to think about things before they react. Can't be impulsive. Leave some of the learned behaviors as you listen. And just remember, great minds reach great places. I love you. I mean it. Bye-bye. This is Brother Suave, your mind-blowing, thought-provoking, and eye-opening, on-air personality, life coach, psychotherapist, author, and creator. Hope you guys having a suave day.
Yeah, and with that, let's commence to pay.
Okay, I'm so suavelous, you so suavelous.
Together we can fix the trauma that's befalling us.
Divine social interactions remains marvelous.
Mind-blowing, suavelicious talk, higher consciousness. But think, letting at your hearts feed trouble, Dr. Brother Suave.
Divine light getting dull.
Hey there, this is Dr. Brother Suave, your mind-blowing, thought-provoking, and eye-opening, on-air personality, life coach, psychotherapist, author, creator, and host of Social Therapy with Dr. Brother Suave. This is a very beautiful season 6, episode 6 on this beautiful Wednesday, November 8th, 2023. Man, listen, this year is going by so, so fast. You know, it seemed like it was just January. But you know what? I thank God for allowing me to see another day that I ain't never seen before. Another day to get it right. Another day to tell my friends and family members I love them. You know what? I love you guys for showing up, man. We're going to have a swab amazing show tonight. Listen, I'm so happy. I'm just happy you guys, if you seeing something, man, that you like and feeling, you need to tell your friends, tell your family. Subscribe, like, and just join us. And if you have a story that you need to tell, hey, you can go ahead and chat with us. But today, man, we're going to have an amazing day, an amazing show, because we're going to be talking about modern day successful Black man, the ones you least expect. And we're going to be having a very, very special guest, man. Tell you a little bit. This brother, man, I met at the Invest Fest, man. And I saw this shirt that I love. And I was like, man. And once I presented that, talked about the shirt, man, we made a connection, man. And the crazy thing is that we come from similar backgrounds. We come from the two worst cities in the state of Florida. Him coming out of Belgrade, I think, was rated number one. And I came out of Opa-locka, was rated number two. The worst cities in the state of Florida. And we just have a connection, man. We have similar backgrounds in terms of our education, our law enforcement, becoming educators, and practicing as psychotherapists, man. We just have similar backgrounds, you know. And, man, it's just an amazing to make a connection to a brother like this. And so we're going to be talking about some of the struggles that we as Black men tend to have to navigate through, because there's so many things that people don't believe. And we had a receipt to show how it is to be successful. But a lot of times when we're trying to tell our stories, we always get in contradiction. So what we're going to be talking about is our journey of striving to be successful while navigating through life's challenges, and also dealing with the stereotypes, upbringing, our toxic environments, and how many odds are stacked up against us, both politically and economically. These are the resources that don't have for us. I mean, they have for us, it's called the prison system. And what they do is try to stack us up in there. And then when we pay our debt to society, they still trying to hold that against us. And it's like it's like a double-edged sword that we're constantly going through. But make sure you tell your friends, because we're going to have a great, great show. So what I'm going to do before I bring on the brother and just talk about a little bit about him, and then he's going to go ahead and tell you about it. So this brother, I'm not going to say his name yet. I'm going to only say it, but he was born and raised in Belgrade, Florida. He is 6 out of 7 children, Bahamian descent. He obtained his bachelor's degree in social work from Florida Atlantic University. Later on, advanced his master's degree in social work with emphasis on family dynamics. And in 2023, he went on to graduate with his doctorate degree in social work. He's been practicing therapy for the past 6 years in the capacity of a therapist at Palm Beach County Schools District K-18. He previously, as I mentioned, worked in law enforcement for over 15 years, and both in the state of Florida and Georgia. After retiring from law enforcement, he decided to advance a career in the public school system. Coming into a district, he decided to create a better relationship within the community and being relatable for the less fortunate families and increase the growth mindset. He's a self-motivated individual, and he loves assisting individuals and students to eliminate or replace disruptive, harmful, and negative harmful behaviors with positive actions. He knows that tomorrow is not promised, so therefore he allows himself to have work and life of work and life balance and schedule to ensure that he's able to provide kindness to all mankind. It says he approaches all his problems with a clear mind and open heart, and he does his daily meditation. So today is a great day, and he's thankful for his life and how he has the opportunity to make a difference in the lives of others. And so, and understand that his past does not define him. People do change. And I agree with that 100%. People do change, especially coming out of our environments. However, last but not least, there are things that always, they're not always as they appear. And in doing so, he does his best because he is strong. So without further ado, let's welcome the brilliant, the talented Dr. Clayton J. Jones.
Yes, what's man. Up, brother? I thank you so much. That was amazing, man. That was amazing. Come out, man. I don't think I ever had like that. But I would like to thank all you guys and the producers and everyone for this opportunity and this platform that you guys are giving me. So thank you again for having me.
Yeah, man. So I know that I just, touched base on your bio, but in your own words, just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're gonna be jumping into this thing head first.
Okay, well, a little bit about me, man. My mom, like you said, my mom is from the Bahamas. So I have a Bahamian background. Also, my dad is American. That passed away about 9 years ago, but he was real on the old school country guy. So you guys probably pick up on that country. You know, that little sling in the background there on my voice. But born and raised, man, Belgrade, Florida, where either you do two or three things. You either play football, you either be a drug dealer, or you did, right? And so I wanted to just change the odds and the stigma for a lot of African-American men. So I decided to go the path and, you know, as a young man after high school, I started working in the prison system. I said, yeah, I don't want to work in the prison system anymore. So I decided to get dual certified. What that means is I got certified law enforcement and corrections. So I decided to take my, my gift that I had that God gave me to go out and help other brothers out on the streets. At the time, you know, you've seen the racism and things like that going on, but it wasn't, you know, so much in my face on the outside looking in until I got in. Once I got in, I seen a lot of different things and what drove me to where I'm at now today, because I kept arresting brothers and not being able to educate them on not knowing the information clinically, right? And not knowing that type of information. So I did law enforcement for about 12, 13 years. And decided to pursue my education in social work and sociology and all that good stuff. And I wanted to learn from a clinical perspective, how do I treat and how do I relate and how do I respond to these different sicknesses that we have now today. And so I better equip myself with those things Also being a young man that came, you know, so much from the hood, Belgrade, Florida, when you get ready to go to sleep, you hear gunshots all night.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, just young man, humble man, and just try to continue to be a better man, a better Black man. Let me say that. Absolutely. A better Black
man. Yeah. And I appreciate that, because I like that last part, because it seemed like when we make it, we want to say, I want to be the best actor. But mm-hmm. sometimes, man, we need to make sure we put emphasis on Blackness, you know. And bottom line is, we already know that could be the best. Hey, Nisha, how you doing? And so, but we know. And so it seemed like we don't want to put emphasis, because it's like this: I'm Black and I'm proud. You know what I'm saying? Me being pro-Black don't mean anti-white. And anybody who know me, both my white, Hispanic, Latino, Jewish, everybody know me. I'm transparent. How I am in private is how I'm in public. Everybody who knows me know the same suave in public is the same suave in private. All my conversations. Right. But at the end of the day, I'm a proud Black man, and I'm happy to advocate. I let people know I advocate for men, because I'm Black first, but I'm also a Black man. And everything comes secondary to that. Because at the end of the day...
Go ahead. Yeah, I don't want to try. I just have something to add to that.
Sometimes in our community, me being an advocate for Black men, it seems like it's an attack on Black women, and it's not. It's just that I know how important it is, because, again, when we're talking about modern-day successful Black men, we have to sit there and stand in the paint for each other, because we are all that we have. We got a system that's systematic against us, and it seems like even within our own community, we're fighting against us. And so it's like, hey, I'm going to do whatever I can to put us on the front foot, because and no matter where you're at in the world, there is an order. And the male species is on the head, but it seems like it's always a problem in our community. And I'm going to advocate for Black men. It's like it was a post that I posted earlier this week. And I was sitting there, and anybody know me, I put positive Black male images. And so when I put that, I don't know what happened, and you know, but it seemed like, I mean, we always have everybody fighting against us, but to me, having a picture of Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Magic Johnson, and Tiger Woods, these are four billionaires. I don't care where you at. To be a billionaire, that's a positive Black man image. But it seemed like, again, if we're not having others fighting against us, we're not having ourselves. But the surprising thing was to have our own brother fighting against, like, what's my definition of a positive? And I'm like, well, when you look at them brothers, they positive and a role model in some brother eyes to make it to that point, because they were successful in what they did. You know what I'm saying? And I think sometimes when we make it to levels of being successful, being educated, or striving, that seemed to be associated with something negative, or somehow it's incorporated to the new term called narcissist. And I just don't see what the problem is. I know you was getting ready to say something, so go ahead.
No, I want to piggyback off what you were saying about moving forward, like, in your career. I remember she's Latino, she's a female, and she used to be my clinical supervisor. And she asked me, she said, hey, what's your goal? Where you want to be at? And I remember telling her, I said, I want to be the top Black male therapist in the United States. You know, and I want you to quote me with what you know. And I'm going to be a sponge and pull everything from you. But during that whole speech, and you know, you was talking, you said the word levels, right? And I think... a lot of people don't understand the fact that there's levels to this. And I used to be that young man that I did not understand. I did not conceptualize the point of levels to things, right? And so I had to understand that, because you have to understand that God may not have prepared you for that third level yet. You probably only prepared for that first level. So you have to go through these trials and tribulations and these different things like that for you to get to level two. You know, then you get to level three, and then you move on, you know, et cetera, or whatever. But, you know, like you were saying, like, about the levels, man, that just hit me just then. I'm not going to tell you, no lie. Like, that really just hit me, because I was like, you know, you have to understand that. Everybody don't understand that it's levels to this thing. Everybody just, they want that quick fix. Mm. You know, they want that quick fix and they want that quick overnight success. And you was talking about Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, all these guys. You have to understand, Michael Jordan got cut from a high school team. The greatest player of all time got cut from a high school team. Now, in today's time, think about the 16 or 17-year-old kid that get cut from his high school team. That'll be devastating for him, correct?
Yeah.
That'll be depressing for him. And we have to learn how to, not just from a mother perspective, but from a father perspective, how to empower that young man to build him back up so he can get to level two and move forward. You know what I'm saying? Because we right here, we're still on level one. You know what I'm saying? Because that's high school, right? And so we need to understand that, hey, this is how we get through that. And so you have to have, you know, that strength and that wisdom, that mindset, because God gave us the mindset, right? And so he gave us that vision for a reason. He gave me and that the vision for a reason. So it was just, that just jumped out at me, man. He said, love. Yeah.
But the thing is, our creator, God, knew exactly what he was doing. And so again, when we become so carnal-minded, we forget. And so it's sad. Socially, there is so much contention for the men. But we got to understand, God put us there. So when you're looking at, when we run here, reading our Bible, it talks about that leadership. It talks about who he designated to be the head of the household. But it seems like as much as that church is filled with women, when they're outside of that church, they have so much issues with order and what God says. I don't care how they feel about it. How it is how it is. You know, and so it's right, like, right. It doesn't say our mother would order heaven. It says our father would order heaven. It talks about how we are responsible. We're supposed to cover. And so what happens is when they start looking at about, oh, y'all men don't cover, they forget about the generational curses. It's looking out of order of having a baby before you have a husband. These things are errors, consequences. Like you said, level to this is just consequences. And based on spiritual disobedience, there are natural and spiritual consequences. And guess what? It ain't like getting better. It's getting worse. Because, you know, when you got a whole pie, brother, the pie is 100%. And let's say you had 5% of people was out of order in our community, it'd be okay. Well, we can work through that and get it down to 3%. Get it down to 2%. Right. Man, we way over here at 75%. You know how much that is to go? You know how many generational curses that has been instilled in our community as a result of doing things out of order? And then when we try to, as again, the struggles that we got to navigate are trying to talk about this stuff, even though we've given them the word, even though we've given them concrete evidence and logic, it's still some contradiction and some resentment. And these are the struggles that we go through on a regular basis. We're just trying to navigate and try to do the best we can in terms of doing, because we are not perfect and we don't have to constantly put disclaimers out there. We just striving. And, you know, striving for excellence doesn't mean you're a narcissist. And they just ran too far with that word. It's just incredible. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And a question I wanted to ask you. Your perspective on how you think our community has been impacted as a result of the lack of presence in households.
Oh, man.
And it ain't always, you know, things are not always as they appear to be. Like, we are abandoning our family. We are married, abandoning our families, because statistics and the numbers, the CDC don't say that.
Right, right. That's, you know, it's so interesting that you asked that question, because I can go many different avenues with you with this. But
we need to go. Remember, I said we ain't always agree on everything, but hey.
I mean, here's my thing. When we talk about a household, right? It's almost like you having, let's say, like a sheriff's office or a police department with no chief, or a sheriff's office with no sheriff. Okay, so when you take that father out of that household, right, there's no man in the house, there's no order, there's no discipline, okay? Now we're talking about family dynamics here, right? So,
and that's your expertise.
Here's my thing. again, you have no discipline. And so what ended up happening is, and I was talking about this with a former coworker, a colleague of mine, and we was talking about connection before content. What ended up happening is that I'm using the name Johnny, right? Johnny, mom tells Johnny, hey, you're the man of the house now. Your dad ain't here, right? So we got the government involved because either he's on child support or he in prison, right? Okay. So he's the man of the house. So when he goes to school, he thinking in his mindset, hey, I'm the man of the house. I'm an adult, right? So now him and the teacher is fighting for authority of her classroom when she's supposed to be the teacher, right? But he's not trying to hear anything that she is saying because his mom told him, right, that, hey, you're the man of the house. I'm a grown man. So now you see these young boys, right?
You're fine.
You see these young boys dressing and doing things that we do, right, besides pay bills. Right? Besides those type of things, right? And responsibility. But it's a mindset that is planted into these young men's brain at an early age, right? And so therefore, they have this mindset or this mentality of, I'm a grown man, you can't tell me nothing. Who are you? Right? And so just to scrape the surface a little bit, that's my take on that. Because I used to, well, I'm a basketball coach also. And I tell the young men, hey, look, for this time to this time, I'm your daddy. You know, and pretty much we're going to do things the way I structure to do things. Like wearing the belt every day. Not one player. If I caught a player on campus and they didn't have a belt on, man, you're going to run all day in practice. I don't care if you're the star player or not. Because I'm showing you and I'm telling you an example. If I can wear a belt, you can wear a belt. And so those are the things. And you got to mirror that. You got to mirror that as a leader and as a head. You have to, when I say you have to mirror that, that means you have to plant yourself. And so they say, hey, Dr. Jones, do you have on a belt? Yeah, let me pull my shirt up. Let me show you I got on a belt. Lead by example. So I'm mirroring that behavior. You're not going to see me with my pants hanging down. You're not going to see these things. And I have to educate them. I have to educate them on the reason from slavery why men were with their pants down, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I get them a little insight on that. And so that's my take on not having a head. You know, you have to have a head on everything. You got to have a head. You know what I'm saying? Because the head brings authority. Brains, this. You see what I'm saying? You know, and so you have to, you respect your boss, right? Mm-hmm. You respect your boss. It's called a hierarchy of discipline or authority or whatever, right? And so we respect that. And so when they know that daddy's coming home for a reason, that little girl is going to get herself together. That little boy is going to get himself together because he know his dad is coming home.
Yes. I'm glad. And that's the thing. That's universal. But it seems like we struggle with that because these are mesh relationships. Because I mean, we see it all the time. You see it in animals. If you remember the little German, I mean, Doberman Pinscher was giving his mother feedback. And then when the father dog came in, or you see the baby who was saying they weren't going to eat his food, and that father came in there and checked them. That's natural. Mm-hmm. It go, when we was growing up, we used to sit there and hear mother say, all right, when your dad get here, it's a problem. But it seems like in our community, you sit there and say your dad, we're like, man, forget that. I don't care about him because our families have been broken. And this is the term what I'm talking about. I created this this term called the matriarch of the household mentality. And remember that 75%. It's so many. The probability that you'll run to a black male who came out of that dynamic, he has that matriarch of the household mentality. These are learned behaviors. There's opposition to order, authority figures, and men.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? And it seems to be that. And so what happens is a lot of us are blamed for not being men when we didn't have that the model. And so how do we learn how to be men? Through osmosis? Right. And a lot of times we sit there, well, and they'll say, ain't no men in the household. Well, here. Now, it may be controversial, but I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it. I don't think it's the children's fault. And people say, well, it seems like you're putting the blame on. Well, the blame got to come somewhere. And I don't think it's the children's fault that sometimes our mothers make poor decisions and who our fathers are. And I'm not talking about this manipulating player, cunning person. I'm talking about the obvious person who don't have the ability to lead, don't have the ability to provide. And if they can't take care of themselves, how on the HE double hockey stick they going to take care of family? So at that point, you can't sit there and say, I can't help while I fall in love with you. You can see this. You can see. You ain't blind to he ain't got nowhere. He ain't can't take care of stuff. He ain't got no economics.
Right.
I mean, how do you think this going to turn out? How do you think it's going to turn out? But guess what? It's definitely not 10% making those mistakes. It's definitely not 30% making a mistake. It's definitely not 50% making those mistakes. It's definitely not 60. This is 70 plus. So obviously, it's a very easy stereotype to point the finger at. And people say, don't, but listen. Because it shows this. It shows that the average guy who could be the biggest schmuck can make a better decision on an average woman who has education, socioeconomic stability. So it shows that he could be a schmuck with nothing and make a good decision on who's having his child in comparison to the one with all education and everything, making a bad decision on who they had child. And at the end of the day, it hurts the children, both male children and female children, because we don't have fathers that we should have had. We was denied that because of the poor decision making. And so again, people can get mad, but numbers don't lie, and this is fact. It may it's like people would say, I'm not flu shot. It hurt, it's very painful, but it's in your best interest.
Correct. And let me jump in real quick, Doc. Let me tell you this. There are two type of leaders. By it, right? You have good leaders that what makes great leaders, right? Or good leaders. Is one, you have to be a good follower, right? Number one. And then we hear these natural born leaders. But if you don't understand or you have not experienced humility, as a black man, it's hard for you to be a leader if you have not experienced that, all right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to go through something. And so goes back to your point of, like, we've seen our fathers. You know, and look, my dad had no more than a high school education. But at the time, I did not understand what he endured or what he went through as a young man. Okay, what his dad gave him. So I had to learn his way of saying I love you or his way of thinking, right? I used to ask my dad, I say, Dad, I love you. My dad didn't know how to respond to that. He used to say, nigga, you don't love yourself. So who tells a 13-year-old boy that, right? But I had to understand and I learned that his father never told him he loved him. His father never told him he loved him, right? And so here we are today. We have these young men that do not put their arms around each other and say, hey, bro, doing a great job. I love you, man. And keep doing it, right? And so, therefore, we have that big drop-off in leadership skills, right? So we get caught up in this social media hype, and we get caught up in this internet hype thinking this is the way to lead our kids, right? As a man, right? Oh, I'm going to buy him shoes. I'm going to buy him necklaces. I'm going to buy him this instead of spending and empowering that young man and teaching him, hey, no, you don't do that. You don't talk to a young lady like that. Yes. You know, you open and close the door for your mom or your girlfriend or whatever. You see, so these are some of the things that these young men don't get because they didn't see it. Back to what you're saying. So when you have an absent father in the household, these are some of the things I want you to think about that you miss. You see what I'm saying? So you miss these things. You don't get them. You know what I'm saying? So now you're trying to tell Johnny he's the man of the house, but Johnny never been taught how to be a man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know what I'm saying?
And that's why I say, how are we going to learn through osmosis? And let me tell you something. God is my witness. Today, it's funny that you're talking about not telling. So today, I was making a joke. So I was, as I was leaving on this site, so I gave my cousins a hug. I said, man, I love y'all. And they were like, I said, I understand. You're not used to having these levels of intimacy without feeling uncomfortable. And I'm telling you, I love it. But I said, I got you. The more you hang around me, the more you're going to get it. And I remember, again, when I worked in the jails, I remember working in the jail. And I remember I used to always tell cats, man, I'm going to show you something. You remember how when cats used to do this, or they used to do this a long time ago, and then they started doing this, and then they started doing this? Well, they felt they needed a barrier. They couldn't, remember, a hug is a hug. But we started doing a half hug because we needed to feel secure. And I tell them, oh, man, bring it in, let me give you a hug. And I remember in the jail now, I stayed in the jail. I'm telling, man, give me a hug, bro. Oh, man, it's crazy. And I said, I ain't got to get no disclaimer, no homo. I'm telling you, this is a safe space, but I'm trying to show you that something you've been deprived your whole life because I don't have any reservations about telling another brother I love them. See, when we in church, we can say it, but what about outside? This is what I'm saying. What we have to be able to walk it and talk it outside of a controlled environment. And you remember, jail is a controlled environment, but also it seems like the church is, because we role play when we're there. But when we outside, I can say, I remember I was doing a podcast with Melvin Brett, and I remember I was telling him, I said, I love you. And he said, oh, yeah, that's it. Because we got to be able to say we love each other without giving a disclaimer, no homo, because a lot of us haven't had that. And I'm blessed. I always had it. I tell my kids, my sons, friends, best friends, anybody I love. Anybody know me, I'm going to say I love you. And I don't have no reservations. And I don't have to sit there and say it slow, loud. I said, brother, I'm leaving, man. I love you. But again, we have to make that a norm. The same way we trying to make successful Black men a norm. And I'm not talking about traditional education, degrees. We're talking about success and striving for greatness. You're talking about search. You're talking about careers. You're talking about trades. Whatever we can do to provide and lead by examples and provide for our families, protect our communities, and give back. Because these are the things when it comes to what you said, leadership. Because you're talking about some of the greatest leaders who put us in a position who had no education. Because they paid to do so that we can have more opportunities. But we got to understand what leadership is. And I love when we able to identify how we able to break generational curses by changing the narrative and understanding what you were saying about love language. You didn't use the word, but you understood your father's love language. And a lot of times we as men, when we're trying to either get custody of our sons, or trying to have more time with us, and being deprived of the system, and also by the baby mothers, we're trying to show them our love language. We're trying to teach them how to relate. We're trying to teach them how to navigate. We're trying to teach them that nonverbal communication and verbal communication. We want them to be more verbal, and we understand why sometimes they're not verbal. But we here to try to intercede and be in their life to show them how to navigate. Because guess what? Our corpus callosum is different from our female's corpus callosum. We see things in an objective way. We see things in a non-emotional way. And so we have to be there for our families and our community, because at the end of the day, it ain't no culture, no religious philosophy has men secondary to anything. We are the head, and this is how it is. But it seems like there's a struggle in our community, and we have to be able to have dialogues and conversations about this stuff. Because we can break these chains of bondage, you know? And I remember I posted something earlier is saying that we got to start teaching our children what we learned, teaching our children early what we learned late in life. You know what I'm saying? And that's how you break generational curses. That's how you build wealth. That's how you build wisdom. You know what I'm saying? And all that stuff comes together. We need that stuff. And we need Father, we need each other, because we don't exist without our women, and our women don't exist without us.
I'm going to jump in. Let me add two things to that. And we talk about society or community, right? Two things. Knowing your place right? Two, this is revelation, understanding. The good word saying, all you're getting, get what? Get understanding. And so we have to understand. You remember going back to wondering why, as a young man, why my father said certain things to me. But when I started getting understanding, see what I'm saying? It hit home a little bit different.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And, correct. And so back to the other part of that, when I said that about knowing your place, I like to always use the analogy of a NASCAR team, right? You know, there are certain things that I can help you with, right? There are certain things that a medical, as far as like a trauma surgeon can help you with. You see what I'm saying? I'm not going to work on the brain because that's not my specialty. Right. So I know my place. Right. When it comes to mental health, that's my thing. That's my lane. Right. And so just like NASCAR, you have one person get a guy water, one guy change the tires, one guy wipe the windows. You see what I'm saying? And so everybody knows their part, their role. You know what I'm saying? And I think as a black man that lives in the community, we don't have these pioneers anymore. We don't have people that know their role. Like you had in my community, you had Mr. Butts, you had Mr. Bathwood. You had guys like this. They knew their place. And the officer, the police officer, certain places that the sheriff's office, they couldn't ride into. But this man, without a gun, without anything, he can ride up in the neighborhood, right? And so they knew their place. They knew that the position they held. You see what I'm saying? So when he ran for commissioner or mayor, he didn't have no problem with getting the community votes because he knew his place. You know what I'm saying? He knew the position and the power and understood it. You know what I'm saying? And all that good stuff. And so he knew that he can have this insight and this influence on the community. You know what I'm saying? And so people listen to him like me. That man changed my life. You know, he's the reason why I am, you know, Clayton Jones, and no knock on my father. My father brought me in the world, but at the same time, I had a team. You know, you're nothing without your team.
Yeah.
And I had someone to speak that empowered me and put that stuff in my life. So I had a young man that guided me and walked me through it. And I seen his wife and his family. And so I wanted to be like him. I wanted to be a great husband one day. I want to have kids and all that type of stuff. So he mirrored that behavior. You didn't see him with a beer bottle or a liquor bottle in his hand when you walked past him or whatever. So you have to have those type of leaders that understand.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. And it's so important. I remember having this philosophy is the biggest cheat code is to have a mentor.
Yes, sir.
And remember you talked about humility?
Yes.
Talk about humility. When you humble enough to seek out a mentor, and they will give you insight because, again, my father, my grandfather, they were great to me, but I still had mentors.
Correct.
Because they were limited.
Correct.
They were limited. But when you have a team, remember talk about NASCAR. Mm-hmm. Then everybody tap into your life.
Right.
All these resources. In different areas. You know what I'm saying? Right. I'm talking about men, women, black, white, Asian, Hispanic. And I think about those members. I think about Miss Johnny Mae Green. I think about Dr. Marilyn Volker. I think about Dr. Hank Stewart. I think about Dr. Maurice Jones. I think about Cherry Johnson. I think about Wallace Durham. I think about all these people. I think about Robert Hardeman, Robert Ingram. I think about Mayor Shirley Gibson. I think about these people. You get it? From different backgrounds was instrumental in me becoming me.
Right.
You know, because you pick from a whole bunch of people. And I remember when I was a kid, and I was in program my dad was at, he had in Opa-locka, it's posted up there, it's Opa-locka crime prevention. I had different people that my dad exposed me to, and I remember Miss Janie Beverly, and Miss Store, and then Dr. Store. Had I not been in that program and my dad exposed me, I wouldn't have never known these people. You understand? Right. Everybody contributed to my life. You understand? Right. And then, you know, and all the imperfections of my father. Then I had my granddad, who was a major hero to me. He was like God to me. I'm like, yo. And showing, you know, how to work hard. Them telling me, never let nobody stop you from making money, especially when it's legal. You know, being able to never be too good to do what you have to do to take care of your family, and which created a philosophy to me, don't let my ego be bigger than my accomplishment. So if I got a goal to accomplish something, I'm going to do any and everything to accomplish the goal.
Right.
You know, I mean, here it is. You say, oh, Dr. Brother Suave, a psychotherapist, sociologist, a teacher, educator. But guess what? This brother go out there, and anybody know me, Reese, I go out there and dig a ditch. I did some concrete today, just learning how to do stuff, because this is not when you just look at labor doing concrete or building a pergola. No, this is skills that I'm acquiring, because a lot of my skills were in academia. Now I'm like, at this stage, still striving to be better, still striving to get more skills. You understand?
Right, right.
And this has helped me when it comes to my property and say, okay, I can do this myself. There's something that my family always picked at me. Dad, you don't even know how to screw the holes in the door. You don't know how to put a light bulb. I say, leave me alone. But guess what? They can't say that now.
Right.
I know how to do stuff. I mean, you're talking about getting my hands and dirty and everything. And I remember on a site, we were beginning, because that first day I got a blister. Oh my God. And they were like, are you serious? You know, but now, you know, and so this is creating balance. And again, a leader leading by example, because you're never too good to learn. You're never too old to learn. And guess what? Ultimately, guess what? This is making me better. And this is going to make me transition into, again, trying to be the best version. And you know how it is. So now that you don't only be driven, you're not only educated, you're not only successful, but you're still striving to become better in different areas. And right. Again, I don't want to be under attack of saying, you think you know everything. You think you know how to do everything. You don't. Listen, this is life. I don't think I need to limit myself.
Right, right. I agree 100%. I mean, I echo the same sentiments that you said, but I was talking to my son, man. I'm gonna tell you guys a story. His mom gave me a call one day, and uh-huh. The mom said to me, hey, KJ did X, Y, and Z, right? What, you know, and he was talking to the young lady this way. She felt so bad, and she called me. And so I knew the story. So I took it upon myself to drive all the way from Miami to Polk. So I drove up there. I picked him up from school. I said, hey, don't get on the bus. No, I'm going to pick you up from school. So he was excited, man. We're talking about a 17, 18-year-old young man, right? He's a senior in high school. And kid, great academic kid. You know, I instilled discipline and academics in him. And very smart kid, 4.2 GPA. But he struggles with communicating, right? And communicating his feelings. And so we get in the car talking, say, anything special happened over the weekend? Say, not really. You know, he's trying to be short with me, but I already know. I know my son. I made that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I say, anything you want to talk to me about? And he eventually opened up. You know, we halfway to his house. And he eventually opened up and told me about the situation. And I told him, I said, hey, this is a learning lesson. I ain't beat him down. But I said, this is a learning situation and, you know, redirect the behavior pretty much. And, you know, and just instill, how do a young man handle adversity? You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times we see in our community that we have a lot of people, they don't know how to deal with conflict resolution. Right?
You don't learn behaviors.
Okay.
From being in a certain environment.
And being in a certain environment, right? We talking about a mother with two young men in the house, right? And so now you need the dad to redirect this type of behavior. See, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that there's no strong mothers out there.
No.
Because there are. Now.
Yes.
But there are certain things that a man is equipped with, right?
Yes. And
certain tools, certain understanding, certain wisdom that they can instill in that young man. You see what I'm saying? And see, mama couldn't do that. Daddy had to do it. And I had to redirect his behavior and tell him, hey, you was wrong. I love you to death, but you was wrong. You know, you have to look at it from this
ability. And we know certain people struggle with that.
Yes, sir. And so, you know, pretty much, man, we had a good talk. I felt good about it. He felt good about it. At the end of the day, the results was positive. You know, and so, you know, it just goes back to what you're saying. Like, when we talk about the community, man, and the community plays such a big part. And that's one of my reasons when I have the opportunity or the platform to go in the community and talk to people in the community.
Yes.
From a perspective of the dynamics of the community and from a clinical perspective, you know, I'm able to give them insight about these things, you know what I'm saying? And being able to understand, you know what I'm saying? So we can break that stigma, you know what I'm saying?
Break that stigma. And the thing is, a very vital skill that we have is that mental health component in our community that people marginalize. Yes. It's like when I remember Dr. Joy Group, she wrote Post-Traumatic Slave Disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about how the generation of trauma and it went down through our bloodstream, the generation of trauma. But us being professionals, you know, we try to tell our people, like, hey, bro, this is not normal behavior. And when you understand trauma, you're talking about urban cities. When you've seen a fighting, a stabbing, a killing, or some type of violence, or moving from home to home, and you having issues building connections, that's trauma. And
yes,
when we try to tell people, oh, man, I ain't trauma. Don't be trying to diagnose me. Listen, instead of being so oppositional, we are professionals. We are trained. Can you just tone it down and just listen, and we can break those chains of bondage. We can break those generational curses. We need to learn something in the process. Let me tell you something. It's one individual, and I'm gonna call his name, and he can get mad all he want to, but it's his brother, because I'm gonna edify him, because he has a nonprofit organization in Miami, Florida. His name is Antonio Goodman. And I remember when I worked in a jail, and I was one of those officers that if you were in there and you under my custody, I'm gonna make sure that you get some education and learn about your history, learn how to be a better man, a better father, a better human being. I used to do these flyers here. You see what that says? 10 ways to be a better father. But it talks about how to be a better father, better man, and a better human being. It talks about that. And I taught him. Now, make a long story short, well, this brother got out, done some incredible things, and he tried to advocate, because I told him, I said, man, you got to be a better father, better man, and better human being. He got out, became a better father, better man, and human being. But he didn't forget the lessons I taught him. I taught him about Kwanzaa, talking about history and how powerful he was as a man. And I said, what I sow into you, you sow into the community when you go out, because you will. And to this day, he is doing great things. I wish I knew the name of the organization off the top of my head, because I would love for anybody to donate. But anyway, if you have an opportunity, Google Antonio Goodman. He's in Miami-Dade County. The brother has a great things for ex-cons and everything. I forgot the name of it, and I apologize, Antonio. But anyway, and these are the things we have to start looking at. These brothers are doing good and looking at people who come back. I mean, you're talking about you pay your debt to society. That's it. You paid your debt. You should not be having this thing held over your head that you know, you're such a bad person. You done paid your debt. You done paid restitution, and you're trying to make a better state. And the system is putting you in a situation where you can constantly be rejected and get frustrated and go back. And that's why we have so much recidivism. But we got to be able to try to support these brothers and try to understand the traumatic experiences that they have. You know, and if we have an opportunity to do that, again, we have to do that. And for family members out there, please, when you have family members who do this for a living, please don't, when they're trying to tell you something, don't take it as an attack on you and talking about this issue. Because when they see something and they're trying to tell you something in advance of being proactive, don't sit there and say that, because guess what? First thing you go into a situation, the first thing you do will be calling that very person to ask them, and then you want all this free information. But when they try to give you some free information, you don't want to hear it. So it behooves you to try to take advantage of that, because again, like they say, today's prices won't be tomorrow's prices, and that's a metaphor for this time I try to give it to you free. But when you come in, that ain't gonna be.
Right. That's so correct. I just to piggyback, I actually have a nephew right now today. He's trying to do, you know, get into this whole mental health thing. And you know, I kind of gave him the blueprint, and I said, hey man, you start out right here so you can learn, because you come from the Army, and you know, it's level. We talked about levels. There's levels to this. And he jumped right out there. And so every day, man, he's blowing me up, calling me, hey, how do I handle this situation? What do I do to this? I say, and before he took the position, I say, do you know how to write a treatment? Mm-hmm. And he was like, nah, no. I said, until you get the education and learn how to do this, I said, it is best for you to seek out a licensed counselor, you know, let them, you know, mentor you, help you out, walk you through these different type of steps. I said, when you talk about, and I'm gonna put myself out, right? When you talk about mental health in Palm Beach County, they talk about Dr. Jones, right? Reason why is because
you get a high five. Let me give my high five.
Yes, sir. I take that, Doc.
Okay.
And the reason why is because I understand humility. I go back, man. I didn't know what God had for me. I just trust the process. You know, we hear people use that as a cliche, right? Trust the process. And I didn't know, man. I was making like $13, $14 an hour coming from where I came from. That was a big, that was humility. That was a slap in the face, you know? And, but I knew that something great is going to happen. So I followed that process, and I got up under some of the best people, clinical social workers, therapists, I mean, you name it, man, psychologists, you know, just call the name like Dr. Feliciano. I got under those people, and they taught me so much, man. Yeah. And they seen the pet, because I loved it. And when you love something, you're passionate about it, yes. You know? And so therefore, I was able to move, and I was able to understand. And I remember having this conversation with one of my mentors. I say, man, I see a lot of trauma, but I don't know how to treat it. And so he said, I got something for that. And so guess what happened? 2 months later, I got a registration from the University of South Carolina Medical School for trauma, right? Trauma informed. So I was able to sit in the classroom, and I was able to do practicals where I know how to recognize trauma. I knew how to treat the trauma. I knew how to write a treatment plan for the trauma,
yes.
Right? And so therefore, now I can get that information back to my people. Right?
Yeah.
I can educate my people on that anxiety and depression and trauma. Like we said, because it can be something as simple as this, bro. Your wife was molested when she was 13, 14 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
She carried it. Not, let's say she's 42, 43 years old.
Uh-huh.
She still carried that.
Yeah.
Because she never got it treated, right? She never dealt with it.
Mm-hmm.
So she thought that, you know, eventually going to a little counseling here and there solve that issue, right? But guess what? Now it's certain things you're not going to divulge to your husband, or certain things you're not going to do to your husband, because you were traumatized at 13, you know? And so these things go in effect too, like we were talking about earlier, back. Talking about the stigma and what happened in slavery, but these are some of the things that happened inside, especially inside the Black household, that happened to our nieces or our cousin or our little sister or that's now wives, you know, and they struggle with it because they never got the proper treatment for these things, you know. And so this is the same young lady that you're asking to raise your son.
Exactly, and that's the thing. When we don't identify, and they forget, that trauma experience, when that job triggers again, they go right back to that same age, yes, sir, the same situation, and yes, all that sir, same illogical and traumatic mindset.
Yes,
man,
sir.
Listen, this has been, like I told people on announcement, this will be a mind-blowing, thought-provoking, and eye-opening experience. Listen, it's about that time. Listen, I don't know if you want to come back for a part two, because the chemistry between you and I is thumbs up, man. I'm telling you.
Yes, sir.
It was great, because there's so much things we have to talk about in terms of the modern day successful Black man and the stories that we have. Because again,
yep,
we too came out the mud. We made it. We have a similar background in terms of our law enforcement career. We both started off in the prison. That's a crazy thing. Then going into the streets and becoming educators, being therapists. You know, man, this is great, man. Listen.
Dr. Swab, let me say this real quick. And since I have this opportunity, I want to put this out there.
Okay, yeah, we only got a
couple minutes. This is very scarce. And what I mean is, how many African-American men that goes on to college, get their degrees, all right? If I'm not mistaken, the ones that get their bachelor's degrees, that go on to get the master's degrees, I want to say it's only like 17%. Mm. Now, we reduce that number when you talk about African-American men with doctor's degrees.
1%. All right,
I just looked it up, 7.7 now. 7.7%, right? And you have two Black men that came from poverty, right? On the same platform with PhDs, right? ESW, PhDs. And so, you know, I find it so amazing, man, to have the opportunity to share the stage with you. Like you said, from the first time that we met, we clicked. We just started breaking bread with each other. And so I would love to, man, like you got my number. Just reach out. You know, I'll be trying to let my secretary handle my schedule a little bit, but just give me a call, man, and let me know. I'd love to have the opportunity, man, to break bread with you, come here and give my people some good feedback and good clinical feedback, and whatever you need, bro, you just let me know, man.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that. Hey, this is another episode of Social Therapy with Dr. Brother Swab. As I told you, this was a mind-blowing, thought-provoking, eye-opening experience. And just remember, great minds reach great places. I love you, and I mean it. Bye-bye.
Tune in and stream live now. Social Therapy with Dr. Brother Swab, the podcast, is now being broadcast on NPN Voice. NPN Voice can be found on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and now on Audible and Amazon Music, and anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. Social Therapy with Dr. Brother Swab, the podcast, now on NPN Voice. NPN Voice, got voice, you heard?